Okay, yeah. So this is what I thought. We're going to have to go backwards one, because you'll notice that if you look at the journal, it starts off and says, "Can grandfather knowing be separated from self?" This is actually in the middle of a self-inquiry that was happening, and grandfather knowing, although it sounds very Native American, and we were just listening to some Native American flute music, the truth is this is a made-up term to name something that's nameless, so that it can be talked about in an inquiry. So what we need to do is we need to go back in the journal to number 419 and kind of get back into the rhythm of this inquiry. By the way, if you're listening on the radio and you want to get to number 419 in the journal, you just want to go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then up on the menu bar, click on step 2. And then click on the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 419. All right, so this is an inquiry process, my own personal inquiry process that we are looking at. But let's start looking at number 419. It is important to separate what is real and unreal and not be deluded. The deluded suffer. The one that is not deluded is at peace, because truth is unaffected by illusory cause and effect. So this kind of just sets the stage for the inquiry. And that as long as that I believe I am something that is at the effect of a cause, I will suffer. And that suffering ends when I realize I am not something at the effect of a cause. When I realize that I am beyond both cause and effect, it is then impossible to suffer, because suffering is an effect of some cause. So if I am beyond both cause and effect, if I realize myself as beyond both cause and effect, it is impossible for me to suffer. The second paragraph. This is an inquiry question. What is present always, unaffected by anything that can be seen, thought, or perceived? Is there something constant and changeless here? So this is an inquiry that is requesting looking. It has just been stated that if I can know myself as beyond cause and effect, I will not suffer. And so now it's requesting, the inquiry is requesting the looking. Is there something right here, right now, something present, that is absolutely constant and never changes? And the answer is yes. Because, again, this is an inquiry process that's been continuing now for many weeks. But what's happened through this inquiry process is that there has been a noticing of something that really can't be called a something, but there's been a noticing of, I'm going to call it I. It's not the I thought, but there's been a noticing of I as a presence that is always constant and never changes. This I, this what I am-ness, it has no name, so it's hard to talk about it, but this self, this I, it's been here regardless of my apparent age, whether I seem to be 3 or 10 or 20 or 47 or 52, it's always been present. Yep, Lisa wrote, it cannot wrinkle or sag, yeah, or get sick or be healthy, right? It doesn't have those differences in it. It's the same whether the personality I seems to be sick or healthy. As the personality's opinions have changed, beliefs have changed, this has always been constant. It's the same now that I seem to be on a spiritual path with a lot of clarity as when I wasn't on a spiritual path, never even thought about a spiritual path, had nothing that I would call clarity. It's the same. So while this Regina thing is changing in all kinds of ways, the body is getting older, the mind is learning new things, the mind is letting go of old beliefs, even that's a change, right? The personality is maturing, maybe hopefully becoming wiser. there's something here. Many people call it awareness. But it's a presence that cannot be separated from what I am. And we've seen this through previous inquiries. I think we might look at a little bit of that here. It's a presence that cannot be separated from what I am. And it is absolutely constant, absolutely changeless, and always here. So when the inquiry question arose, what is present always, unaffected by anything that can be seen, completely unaffected. There's no cause that affects it. Aging doesn't affect it. Getting sick does not affect it. Having new insights does not affect it. Losing my memory, my brain, I think I mentioned this last night, my brain is just unbelievably not working well. I don't remember all kinds of things. It misfires and the absolutely wrong word will come out of my mouth. I'll mean to say vase and the word that comes out of my mouth could be sink. You know, just total misfires. But even with the brain seeming to fail, this awareness is unchanged. It's unaffected by that. So no cause can touch it. So there is something constant and changeless here, right? So the next inquiry question then that came up and said, what is that? And as I said, it cannot be separated from what I am. So it would have to be called I-I. And I-I is a term that's borrowed from Ramana Maharshi. But it I-I means more core to what I am than the I-thought. And I'm getting a private message, so it's someone who doesn't usually private message me, so we'll see if there's something up. But it's I'm going to go ahead and share the private message. I was talking about how my brain doesn't work, and this friend of mine wrote and said, welcome to the beginning of menopause, LOL. Yeah, and Lisa's in the room, Omvadi, she said the same thing to me, that it was the beginning of menopause. So, yeah, but even with the beginning of menopause, this awareness is not effective, which is really fun to watch. It actually helps, I think. I think that if this is menopause, then us ladies have a definite advantage in that we can see that we are not our brains. I used to have a big question in my mind, am I my brain? You know, is that what I really am? And when the brain ceases to be, I cease to be. And what's happening is by watching the brain literally fail, it's actually helping me to notice this I, this presence that isn't changing, even as the brain is really beginning to fail in a big way. So actually, I perceive the brain failing as a big advantage because it takes away the question, am I the brain, right? Am I my mind? Because when that doesn't work anymore, and yet this presence is completely unaffected, it makes it easier to distinguish, I would say. So what is that that is completely unaffected? And like I said, it's being called I here, meaning it's more myself than the mind, more myself than the brain, more myself than the personality, more myself than the body, right? It's more myself than any of that. So it's called I. The next question is, can it be seen? And the answer is no, no. There is awareness that is presently here, but it cannot be seen. It's almost as if, you know, I guess the best way to say it is that you know it's here. If it wasn't here, there would be no presence. There would be no existence. There would be nothing. So you know that it's here, but you cannot see it like an object, right? It's our own isness. And you can't look at your own isness. It's just not possible. So there's a knowledge of an absolute knowledge that it's here. In fact, I would say it's the one thing that can't be raised to question. You know, I can be taught through inquiry to question lots of ideas that I used to perceive as fact, like am I a body? You know, am I a personality? Am I a woman? You know, is the world real? I can learn to question those things. And in fact, through this inquiry that's happening in step two, we have seen that there's actually reasonable doubt, strong reasonable doubt, that a woman exists, that a world exists. But is there existence here? Is there a presence here? Is there awareness here? Is something aware? That just cannot be questioned. Something is present. Something is aware. Maybe we're still inquiring into what that is. Maybe we're still discovering what that is. We're still discovering the difference between what we are not and what we are. But we definitely know that we are. So, yeah, it's all that we can be sure of, as Lisa has written here. So, there is an awareness here. I know it's here, but it can't be seen because it's not an object. It's absolute. In fact, this is what they call direct experience knowledge. Right? It's absolute, direct experience knowledge. The next question becomes, does it ever change? And the answer is no. It remains always the same, regardless of the changes mind perceives and experiences. Again, this awareness was the same when I was 5 years old as it is now. It's the same when I'm sick as when I'm healthy. It's the same when I'm happy as when I'm sad, right? As the personality and the body shift and change, this present awareness is exactly the same. There's no change in it. The next question, is it part of the mind? The answer that came was no. The mind seems to be within what it is. And it is before mind and before everything mind seems to be, before all the mechanisms of mind. Now, this was not just a quick answer that I came up with. If you were here, it was probably last Monday. We went through the inquiry that led to this answer. But what we saw as we looked at thoughts, as we looked at the question, am I my thoughts? As we looked at the question, am I my attention? As we looked at the question, am I my mind? What we found through that inquiry process was I could not be any of those things. I could not be any of those things because I could see them. Because I can see thoughts, right? And I can make a decision about whether to believe a thought or not. If I can make a decision about whether to believe a thought, for example, the thought, I'm unworthy, I can believe it and experience it or not believe it and therefore not experience it. I can't be the thought if I can make decisions about it. We also looked at attention, and my attention came up as a question. But I can notice that my attention is engrossed in thoughts. I can notice that my attention is lost in mind wandering. And I can choose to take my attention out of mind wandering and focus it, for example, on the heart, focus it on a mantra, focus it on awareness. If I can notice my attention and redirect my attention, then I can't be attention, right? Just like if I can pick up a hammer and hammer a nail, I can't be the hammer or the nail. They're tools that I can use, but I am not the tool. The next question that we began to look at in inquiry is, am I the mind? But then the answer that came, as we looked at that in inquiry, the answer that came was pretty amazing. The answer that came was, I can't answer this question with mind, therefore I'm not going to use the mind to answer the question. And as soon as the decision was made not to use the mind to answer the question, it was clearly seen, well, that I'm not mind. If I can make a decision to use mind and all of the processes of mind, thinking, analyzing, investigating, remembering, you know, projecting into the future, if I can decide to use those mechanisms, or I can decide not to use those mechanisms and just be in a waiting status until some kind of an answer appears without the use of mind, then I can't be mind. I can't make a decision to be myself or not be myself. What I am just is. And in fact, this is a point that Jesus makes in N.T.I. Mark. Now, N.T.I. Mark is a fictional story. That's a fictional story that's used to point to truth. And in N.T.I. Mark, there's this one scene where the Pharisees are criticizing Jesus and the apostles because Jesus is teaching. And the apostles are, you know, listening, engrossed in listening. And somebody passes out food, and they continue to listen to Jesus, and they begin to eat. And they don't follow the Jewish practice of getting up and washing their hands first, which is not just a, a minor, you know, like for us, if we get up and wash our hands, cool. If we don't get up and wash our hands, you know, that's cool too. It's our business. But to the Pharisees, this was a religious, this was against the religious law. They are definitely supposed to wash their hands before they eat. It's religious law. So they were breaking religious law by not washing their hands and continuing to listen to Jesus. And the Pharisees held Jesus accountable because he was the teacher. He was the leader. And so he was leading them to break the law, right? And Jesus pointed out that, you know, a man is not clean or unclean because of what he puts in his mouth. You know, because he eats with, quote, dirty hands and maybe germs go in his mouth. This does not make the man unclean, which is what the belief is, unclean and unfit for worship, right? Jesus went on to point out, he said, not even a man's thoughts can make him unclean. It doesn't even matter what he thinks, because he has a choice about his thoughts. He could choose to think, a thought that is could be considered good, or he can choose to think a thought that can be considered bad. And if he can choose to think a thought, then he cannot be the thought. Jesus said, what a man is his essence. His essence, which was created by the Father and is holy like the Father. And he has no choice about that essence. And because he has no choice about that essence, it cannot be unclean. Therefore, there is nothing a man can do that can make him unclean, certainly not eating without washing his hands. This was the point. Well, this is true here as well. What I am is something I have no choice about. So if I have a choice about whether to use the mechanisms of mind or not, a choice about analysis, a choice about looking at the future, looking at the past, a choice about, analyzing, a choice about anything, if I have choices about the mechanism of mind, I can't be the mind because what I am, I have no choice about. So again, the question was, is it, the I, what I am, a part of the mind? And the answer was no. No, because I can still see mind. I can watch mind. So the next question comes up, then what is it? What is this I? And the only answer that I could come up with was formless self. And that wasn't just an intellectual answer, although the words, you know, sound like something that we might read in A Course in Miracles or something. But I had to say formless because it's not an object that I can see. It has less form than even a thought. And I had to say self because I know it's what I am. I cannot separate it from what I am, right? So I had to say itself. It's formless self. Just words, but the best answer I had for the question. The next question that came in this inquiry was, does it, this formless self, this awareness, have a beginning? And the answer that came immediately was, I don't know. Because I can't see to see if it has a beginning, right? The next question was, who doesn't know? And when that question was asked, I realized intellectual mind does not know and cannot make this determination. The intellectual mind cannot see I, or formless self, or what I truly am, or awareness, or whatever the heck you want to call it. Intellectual mind cannot look back at it like an object and determine if it has a beginning. So intellectual mind does not have an answer to the question because it can't be seen. The next question came up then, what is obviously unreal then because it cannot determine or verify reality? Now this goes back again to a previous inquiry. So all of these inquiries build on previous inquiries. I'm sorry if you're kind of jumping in at the middle because you kind of missed the flow of what's already been realized through this step two process. But what was seen before was that something unreal cannot verify reality. This was seen through a previous inquiry. So if the mind cannot look at this self that I know that I am, that I cannot separate myself from, and determine what it is, whether it has a beginning or not. You know, if mind cannot look at it and make determinations about it, mind then is unable to verify reality. And if, based on a previous inquiry, what was realized, if mind is unable to verify reality, that means mind is not real. Because reality can verify reality. Unreality cannot. So if mind cannot look back at I, look back at self and say, well, it did have a beginning or it didn't have a beginning and here's what it is. And if mind can't do that, that means that mind is illusory. So what is obviously unreal then because it cannot determine or verify reality? The answer is intellectual mind. Now the next question, does intellectual mind have a beginning? Immediately on an intuitive level, what I received was the feeling, the knowing, yes, intellectual mind has a beginning. The next question that came in the inquiry was, what knows this? Mind could not answer the question, does I have a beginning? But something in me knew mind has a beginning. So what knows this? And my answer was, you know, I don't know. There just seems to be an intuitive knowing that knows this. Something knows. Like this wisdom is present. So this is where the nickname comes in. It says, this intuitive knowing will be called grandfather because it knows of mind's beginning. In other words, you know, if mind believes it's what I am, you know, mind believes it's the source of the world, of the personality, right? This is before mind, because mind cannot see it, this intuitiveness, but this intuitiveness can look at mind. So because it's before mind, we're going to call it grandfather. It's just a temporary nickname so we can call it something in order to inquire about it. Probably the reason that grandfather was chosen is we don't want to give it some kind of a name that the intellectual mind already has thoughts about. You know, like God, even capital S self, awareness. You know, if we start labeling it with something that mind already has thoughts about, then mind is just going to jump into, oh, it's this, based on intellectual learning. So a name that at least my mind has no thoughts about, but a name that could just identify what this inquiry is now looking at was given. And because it's before mind, it precedes mind, just like a grandfather precedes a father, right? The name grandfather was given. The name has no other significance than that. So this intuitive knowing will be called grandfather because it knows of mind's beginning. Inquiry will attempt to determine what grandfather knowing is by investigating in its direction. All right, so this just sets us up so we can look at 520. Or 420. Sorry, we're in the 400s. So if you'll scroll down with me now below the comment and reply area and click on number 420, and I'm going to give you that link again just in case you need that. And I'm going to go ahead and read the quote again from the Seven Steps to Awakening, number 420. This is originally coming from the Supreme Yoga. The reality is beginningless and endless, and it is not even reflected in anything. That is the reality. So probably even the quote itself makes more sense now that you're kind of in the middle of this inquiry with me. You know, or maybe at the beginning of this when I just read the quote, it just kind of sounded odd. But I'm in the middle of an inquiry here that's lasting for many, many days, and it's very intense. And what's happening is we're jumping in at the middle, in the middle. The reality is beginningless and endless, and it is not even reflected in anything. That is the reality. All right, let's go to number 420 in my journal and watch how this inquiry continued. So now we're investigating in the direction of this intuition that was before mind, and we're calling it grandfather. The first question that the inquiry came up with was, Can grandfather knowing be separated from self? And the answer was no. You know, it's interesting because I can separate thoughts from myself. Like I said, I can take a thought and I can look at it. I can look at the thought, you know, I'm unloved. I can look at the thought, you know, I'm mean. I can look at the thought, I'm stupid. I can look at the thought, I'm smart. I can look at the thought, I'm better than other people. I can look at that thought and I can make a decision about whether it's true or not, whether I want to believe it or not. I can separate myself from my thoughts. As we saw, I can separate myself from my attention. I can notice that my attention has gone off into some daydream, and I can bring it back, and because I want to, place it on maybe a mantra. So I am separate from the attention. But can I separate myself from this grandfather knowing, this intuitive knowing that I felt, that new mind had a beginning? And the true answer when I looked at that was no. It was almost as if this wisdom was an inherent part of self. In fact, if we were to throw labels on it, a label that would probably be used would be, I don't even think I want to throw a label on it. I'm going to skip that for now. I feel like that would be a mistake. But the question is, what told me that would be a mistake? What is that intuitive wisdom that just told me not to go there? Don't throw a label on it. Don't remind anyone of any teaching they've ever heard before right now. Don't go there. There's this intuition, this intuitive knowing that is so central to the self that I can't separate myself from it like I can a thought. Thoughts are out there, you know, away from me compared to this intuition. This intuition is more core. So can this grandfather knowing be separated from the self? And I said no. The next question was, can grandfather knowing be affected? And the honest answer when I looked at it was no. And this answer came with great certainty. This knowing doesn't change. It doesn't develop over time. It's not like intellectual knowledge. It isn't learned. It's inherent. That's the only word I keep coming up with. It's inherent. So the question was, can grandfather knowing be affected? And I said, no. And this answer came with great certainty. Something in me knew this completely. The next question was, is grandfather knowing certainty? And the amazing answer that came as I looked at that was no. Because grandfather knowing has no sense or quality about it. I can't say that it's certainty or that it's uncertainty. It can't be, I'm trying to think of how to describe this. It can't be grasped at like a thought can be and defined like a thought can be. It's more subtle than that. It's a subtle intuition that is present when it needs to be present. You could say it's, you know, probably some people would say it's in the moment. But it doesn't have a quality about it, even strong enough, a strong enough quality to say that it's certainty. Certainty is something. I know what certainty is. I've felt certain before, and I've felt uncertain before. This is before those, because it's before mind. It's before these kinds of ideas. So is grandfather knowing certainty? And the answer was no. Grandfather knowing has no sense or quality about it. And then the next question came, what knows this? And the only answer I could say was something. It just is known, right? It just is known. The inquiry came back and said, that something is what is being called grandfather knowing. Forget everything read in books or taught by teachers and look at direct experience now. Can anything be separated from the knowing that is called grandfather? So what the inquiry was asking me to do was to look at these intuitive answers that were arising in me so quick as these questions were being asked and ask me if I could separate myself from this intuition so that the intuition was an object, like a thought is an object. Can anything be separated from the knowing that is called grandfather? I said, there is knowledge that seems to be present and not a part of mind's perceivable world. That knowledge includes knowing existence and knowing non-affected. This knowing sees mind as an object, an illusory object, and it is not concerned about it, not concerned about mind. It has no concern for mind whatsoever. It has a feeling of realness, and it seems to know the difference between what is real and what is false. This is when I'm looking right at this knowledge, this knowing. This is looking right at, maybe wasn't the best choice of words, because again, it's not anything that can be seen. But when I was being completely aware of it, you know, just like you know, you can't look at, here's an example that we can use, you can't look at the fact that you know that you exist, right? That's not something you can take out and look at, like you can take a thought out and look at it. But you know it. But you can't, there's no way you can say that that knowledge is an object. You can't separate yourself from the fact that you know that you exist. It's just known. It's an absolute. That's what this grandfather knowing is. It's just this knowing that is absolute. It's different than a thought, right? And there's no way you can separate yourself from it. You can't separate yourself from the knowing that you exist. Like you can separate yourself from the thought that you are unworthy. It's not the same. So the next question that came is it, this grandfather knowing, separate from I? And I said, I cannot say that it is. And then the next question, is I apart from it? And I said, mind cannot make this determination. Again, because mind cannot look back at I and determine if this knowing is somehow separate from I. And so then the inquiry said, without mind, how is this question asked, answered? Without mind, how is this question answered? Now, what's interesting is the inquiry is now asking me not to use the mind, which again proves I'm not the mind. And this is when the answer came, this knowledge is inherent. This is what is called the peace of God or self-knowledge. There is no reason to separate grandfather knowing from I. It is better to say they are one and inseparable. That's like saying there is no reason to separate the realization that I exist or that existence is present from the self. You don't need to say the knowledge of existence is one thing and the self is another. You can't separate that inherent knowledge from the self. So the grandfather knowing, whatever name you want to put on it, is an inherent part of the self. And in fact, I'm in the 600s now. I don't know if I can find exactly where I'm at in the 600s, but I recently read a quote in the 600s that talked about the fact that if you take away the mind, that what you're left with is intelligence. And I can't find that exact quote. It would be nice if I could quickly find it and read it to you. But again, this intelligence, or this is what the Course would call knowledge with a capital K, This knowingness that cannot be separated from the self, that's what's being referred to here. It's an absolute knowing that is beyond inquiry, beyond like inequality, beyond duality. All right, let's just go on to the next one, shall we? So if you scroll underneath the comment and reply area, you can click under 421. I'll also give you the link in the room. We have 10 minutes left, so let's see how we... Oh, actually a little more because I forgot my computer clock is wrong. We have 15 minutes according to my ticking clock. If I read number 421 out of the 7 Steps to Awakening, again, this is a quote from the Supreme Yoga. Nothing is created in or by cosmic consciousness, for it remains unchanged and unmodified. Again, nothing is created in or by cosmic consciousness, for it remains unchanged and unmodified. All right, so looking at number 421 in the journal, again, this is what was written after contemplating that quote I just read. I wrote, truest I, or I, is unaffected and unchanging beingness. This has been seen and verified. And again, the word seen is used loosely here because you can't actually see it, but you know it, right? So this has been seen and verified. However, the teachings go beyond this. The teachings call I omnipresent or non-local. The teachings say I or self is all that is. The teachings say nothing is created in or by omnipresent consciousness. I, and this is referring to Regina, I am on a mission of not replacing belief with belief. I am on a path of direct seeing and knowing. I have been asked to be honest beyond human honesty in verifying what is directly known. At this stage, then, there is doubt. So this is what we call self-honesty. That's what's appearing in the journal now. There is some doubt that I is omnipresent. And there is great doubt that nothing is created in or by omnipresence. There is also an inability at this stage in seeing to understand that nothing is created by omnipresence. Yet, step by step, previous stages of seeing have been transcended. I do not hold on to this doubt. I am open to true seeing. Amen. So a part of what happens in my process, and this is very, very important to me, is just because somebody says it so, I don't take it to be so. What came out, especially in step one of the 7 steps, is that intellectual knowing is not knowing. So we don't read in a book that the world is not real. We don't read in a book that self, true self, is all there is, and then say, hey, true self is all there is, I know that. Because that isn't knowing that. We just saw there's something called knowledge, something, you know, that we could call knowledge, that has nothing to do with the mind, something that is before the mind, a true seeing. Although seeing, again, is being used loosely. And this is what we're after, this absolute knowing. So I don't want to read in a book that self is omnipresent, that self is non-local, meaning it's not in the body, that all things are self. I don't want to read that in a book and then say, hey, I know that, because you know what? That's not true. That's a lie. When we read it in a book and then say we know it, we're lying. We don't even know that we're lying. We want to know through direct experience. We want to know with that. We want to get to that grandfather's knowing. We want to reach that level of knowing that's already within us. And so what happens when I'm in the inquiry, when I read something and I can see my mind just wants me to say, okay, I get that. I don't fall for that thought. Okay, I get that. I say, no, I don't get that. No, I don't. I'm not at the point of knowing yet. I haven't uncovered the knowing in me that I is omnipresent. I have not uncovered the knowing in me that I is non-local. I have uncovered the knowing in me. I have uncovered it. I have seen it for myself that there is an awareness here, an I here, that is unaffected by anything. That I know. I've uncovered it. I've seen it. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But that I still seems local to me. Right? It still seems I am sitting here seeing a stapler. Lisa Omvati Hansen is not sitting here seeing a stapler. You see, she is local to that body. I am local to this body. Sure, we both still have the same unaffected awareness. I know that she has the same unaffected awareness that I have, right? But I don't see the non-localness. I haven't had a direct experience of that. So that's what's happening in this journal at this point. At this point, I'm saying I'm not going to buy that as intellectual knowledge. I am sticking to my commitment that I need direct knowledge before I will say, I know that. So that's what's happening with number 421. I'm sticking to my commitment to demand direct knowledge and not to settle for intellectual knowledge. So if we scroll down and click on number 422, I'll read 422 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. It says, the mountain seen in a dream only appears to exist in time and space. It does not occupy any space, nor does it take time to appear and disappear. Even so is the case with the world. Again, the mountain seen in a dream, meaning a nighttime dream, you know, when we're snoring. The mountain seen in a dream only appears to exist in time and space. It does not occupy any space, nor does it take time to appear and disappear. Even so is the case with the world. All right, so we'll look at 422 in the journal. And there is a link to 422. Oh, I love this one. I'm not going to be able to finish this one good either. Well, we'll see. Maybe I can. I keep forgetting my computer clock is wrong. So we still have about 7 minutes, so maybe we can. Two nights ago, there was a burglary in my house. I caught the burglar in my kitchen, and with great determination, I broke his jaw. I may even have killed him. And then I awoke. There was no burglary. I had done nothing. Nothing was created by this dream. Nothing existed or ceased to exist because of the dream's appearance. This was verified upon awakening. Now, this is an actual experience that I had. I had a dream, you know, a couple nights before 422. And in my dream, you know, I remember going into the kitchen. I knew there was a burglar in my house. I went into the kitchen and I saw him. And in my dream, for some reason, there was this intuitive knowing that I had to break his jaw. And I remember in my dream, the fear thought that came was that I'm not strong enough to break his jaw. I can't do that. But then this intuitive knowing came back that I had to, and if I had to, I could. And so in the dream, what I did, you know, is I put my hands in his mouth, and I pulled up on the upper part of his mouth and down on the lower part of his mouth, and I pulled and pulled and pulled until the jaw snapped. And then I woke up. And when I woke up, the very first thought that crossed my mind was, that didn't happen. that wasn't real. I knew that there had been no burglar. I knew that I had not broken anybody's jaw. There hadn't even been an intuitive guidance that I had to break the jaw. The whole thing was unreal. Well, that's what this quote that we read from the Supreme Yoga is saying about the world. And as we go further in the seven steps, this realization of the unreality of the world is only going to grow deeper. But the world is so unreal. Of course, this is course talk. It's not going to sound any different than any course talk that's ever been spoken in this room before. The only difference is the depth of realization behind the words. This world is so unreal that we don't ever do anything.